Blog Talk Radio.
Do you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Do you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Thinking. Chris, shrinking, nah, I just don't brag about the deals I've been inking, honorary degrees from Lincoln, I cross borders like those Sheikins and do albums in a weekend, I'm hip-hop speaking, never the weakling, I'm the truth, man, so what are y'all speaking, them lies and them liars, I still make flyers, I still ride bands and say MC for hire, I'll spit the fire anywhere, any place, mama never told you to stay out of grown folk face, then you got them rappers with that cold broke face, they torn around the world, then they going no place, my KRS one moves at his own pace. On vegetable oil, no gas, no waste. Then you got these intellectuals, really they're sexual, but they wanna remain respectable. Stop frying.
Do you think
they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Do you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Thinking me, I say impeccable, running circles around these intellectuals, what a spectacle, they get mad when I say I and God are identical, you better get on your knees and praise them, these conspiracy theory rappers, I blaze them too, ooh, deja vu, you seen this all before me, slaying your crew, I'm known by all the kids, I studied Dr. King, man, and all he did, people don't stop calling CRISPR gigs, cause when I'm on the mic, man, I flip they lid, me getting bullshit, I can't even count all the dough this month I did, from coast to coast, we roasting toast, I'm hot, me and the ice can't get close,
do
you think they really ready for you, nah? That there'll be many of you, nah. Do you really think they ready for you, nah? Do you think they really ready for you, nah? Do you think that there'll be many of you, nah? Do you really think they ready for you, nah? Revolutionaries know the game. We take away the pain like Novocaine. Knowledge reigning supreme, you know the name. This the name that don't play all them games. I ain't gonna call no names or take away no fame, but the airwaves is a shame, and the public don't know who to blame, so they blame rappers like we are insane, like we are to blame for society's pain, like they don't know for sure what's in our brains. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Same style oppression, socially rearranged. Many of our problems we already overcame, but we stuck in the past, can't see the change. Stuck in the Hyundai, can't see the range. Stuck in the towers, can't see the planes.
Do
you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Do you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah.
Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic at all, but he just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique, it was special.
Can you see by the dawn? So proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming. Whose broad stripes and bright stars through the sky.
you're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4.
I got something, y'all, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing along. Lift every voice and sing, till it in heaven ring with the harmony of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high. Loud as the Georgia. God of our weary years, God of our silent tears, thou who has brought us thus far, oh, oh, long the way, thou who has found thy might, say, to the bank, keep us forever, oh, in the past we pray.
What's going on, everybody? Jimmy Underground Radio Network is on the air. Sorry about Monday, and I'm going to try to get Thursday popping off in May, everybody. Trust me. This campaign's been kind of hard, so we're going to deal with our show, with what's been going on this past week. Clyde DeBundy and Donald Sterling. And we're also going to deal with the Michigan affirmative action. I feel this all connects the same. It's all connected in the same banner.
Oh, I'm coming threatening my very
Yeah, everything is just a shot away. Now, here we got Clive Bundy out in Nevada, who had some crazy things to say. I'm going to comment on it. You know, some things he said, you know, it says what he said, how he said it. Some of the things I, you know, I kind of agree with, but before y'all jump on Jimmy Lee and start calling me Uncle Tom, so let me let everything play for itself, and then I'll let you go on from that point on. And then we're going to deal with Donald Sterling. Y'all heard the tape. Y'all know what happened. You know he lost his team, or did he lose his team? He still signs the checks. He still makes money. His wife still can get a settlement. I mean, what really happened in the end? Okay, but let me start the song off with something that I think is appropriate for where we are at right now. And then I'm going to go into the clips. And to put a Brad Paisley up, we're going to go on what I think is called the accidental racism. Accidental racist. Now, because Clive Bundy and Donald Sterling both feel they're not racist. Maybe they're not. But maybe, you know, everybody has a right to be, I guess, prejudiced in their own ways. But if you are sitting in a position where your prejudice views affect someone's upper mobility, then, you know, it is what it is. But let me go ahead and kick the show off, everybody. Hope you enjoy it.
Bucks down on Main. I hope you understand. When I put on that t-shirt, the only thing I meant to say is I'm a Skinner fan. The red flag on my chest somehow is like the elephant in the corner of the I just walked him right in the room. Just a proud rebel son with an old can of worms, looking like I got a lot to learn. But from my point of view, I'm just a white man coming to you from the Southland, trying to like not to be. I'm proud of where I'm from, but not everything we've done. And it ain't like you and me can rewrite history. Our generation didn't start this nation. We're still picking up the pieces, walking on eggshells, fighting over yesterday. Between Southern pride and Southern blame. They called it Reconstruction, fixed the buildings, strides and tears. We're still sifting through the rubble after 150 years. I try to put myself in your shoes, and that's a good place to begin. It ain't like I can walk a mile in someone else's skin. Yes, I'm a white man living in the Southland. Just like you, I'm more than what you see. I'm proud of where I'm from, but not everything. Can rewrite history. hot somewhere between Southern pride and Southern blame.
Dear Mr. White Man, I wish you understood what the world is really like when you're living in the hood. Just because my pants are sagging doesn't mean I'm up to no good. You should try to get to know me, I really wish you would. Now my chains are gold, but I'm still misunderstood. I wasn't there when Sherman's march turned the South into firewood. I want you to get paid, but be a slave, I never could. Feel like a newfangled jangle dodging invisible white hoods. So when I see that white cowboy hat, I'm thinking it's not all good. I guess we're both guilty of judging the cover, not the book. I'd love to buy you a beer, conversate and clear the air. But I see that red flag and I think you wish I wasn't here. If you don't judge my new rag, I won't judge your red flag.
Mason Dixon needs some fixing.
I hope you understand what this is all about.
Quite frankly, I'm a black Yankee, but I've been thinking about this lately.
I'm a son of the new South.
The past is the past, you feel me?
And I just want to make things right.
Let bygones be bygones.
All that's left. Southern pride.
R.I.P. Robert E. Lee. But I gotta thank Abraham Lincoln for freeing me. You know what I mean? It's real. It's real. It's true.
I want to tell you one more thing I know about the Negro. When I went through Las Vegas, North Las Vegas, and I would see these little government houses, and in front of that government house, the door was usually open, and the older people and the kids, and there's always at least a half a dozen people sitting on the porch. They didn't have nothing to do. They didn't have nothing for their kids to do. They didn't have nothing for the young girls to do. And because they were basically on government subsidy, and so now what do? They abort their young children. They put their young men in jail because they never learned how to pick cotton. And I've often wondered, are they better off as slaves picking cotton, having family life and doing things, or are they better off under government subsidy? Yeah, they did get no more freedom. They got less freedom. They had less family alive and their happiness. You can see in their faces they weren't happy sitting on that concrete sidewalk. Down there they were probably growing their turnips. So that's all government. That's not freedom.
I'm wondering, Cliven Bundy's wondering about these people. Now I'm talking about the black community. I'm wondering, are they better off with their young women aborting their children? Are they better off with their young men in prison? And are they better off with the older people on the sidewalks in front of their government-issued homes? With a few children on them, are they better off? Are they happier than they was when they was in the South in front of their homes with their chickens and their gardens and their children around them and their men having something to do? Are they better off? I'm a-wondering. And that's the question I put before the world. Are they better or were they better then? I'm not saying that I thought they should be slaves or I'm never even saying they was better off one way or the other. I'm wondering if they're better off. You know, I might not have a very big word base or what a vocabulary, I guess. But let me tell you something. When I say set slavery, I mean slavery. I understand what slavery's all about, and there's no question in my mind about that I don't know what slavery's about. Slavery is about when you take away choices for people. And you transfer people and sell them and all of those kind of things. What America's all about? You think that's what I'm about, America? If it is, you're sure wrong, because I don't believe in any of that type of stuff. I believe that a man should have some free agency.
Now, I know you guys have heard Mr. Clive Bundy's statement about the Negro. You know I got something to say about it. I got an opinion about that, too. No, I don't agree with everything he said, but I understand where he was coming from in some sense. I said, breathe. Some of you can't breathe. I'm your host, the Doctor of Common Sense, E.T. Williams. Please visit the website at www.whateverhappenedtocommonsense.com. I got something to say. I know you guys have been familiar with Clive Bundy and his stand with the folks down in Nevada, the BLM, the federal government. There was a movement that was resisting the federal government. And I told somebody, I don't know who I was talking to, I said, they're going to stick a microphone in his face, and he's going to keep talking, he's going to say the wrong thing, he's going to backpedal, and some of the Republicans are going to backpedal, because they're not, when they talk, they're expressing themselves, apologizing for something you really believe. If you really believe it, just say it. But I'm going to show you the hypocrisy of the liberals, and then I'm going to show you the part of Clive Bundy's statement that I disagree with. But I'm going to show you the hypocrisy of people throughout history that the liberals and the blacks support that have said stuff a whole lot more racist than this. You know, what happens is that if a person can get you on the defense and you keep playing defense, you're not able to play offense. See, the liberals are good at making the conservative play defense. I don't play defense. Somebody try to get me to defend something, I ain't defending a damn thing. I say whatever hell I want to. They be trying to get me to answer. I ain't answering a damn thing. You defend it. I answer the question. I move on. Can't have me defend. You trying to get me sidetracked. So I have you playing defense. I don't play defense. I'm a ball hog. I play offense. That's what I do. I ain't addressing a damn thing. But I am going to address this. They put a microphone in the face of Clive Bundy, and he says, I want to tell you one more thing I know about the Negro. He said, Mr. Bundy recalled driving past a public housing project in North Las Vegas. And in front of that government house, the door was usually open. Older people and the kids, and there was always at least a half a dozen people sitting on the porch. They didn't have nothing to do. They didn't have nothing for the kids to do. They didn't have nothing for their young girls to do. And because they are basically on government subsidies, so now what do? He asks. This is him still talking. They abort their young children. They put their young men in jail because they never learn how to pick cotton. That's the part I got a problem with, too. And I've often wondered, are they better off as slaves, picking cotton, having a family life, and doing things, are they better off under government subsidy? They didn't get no more freedom. They got less freedom. Now, I'm going to agree with him like that. I said this myself. I said that blacks are more enslaved now, being free, following behind the Democrats and all these government programs that they've been put in place that has enslaved them more, took the father out the home. But that ain't the problem, though. See, this is what he's making a mistake. I don't got a problem with him saying Negro, because they got the Negro College Fund. They said Negro. Hell, I say Negro. I told you the difference. I said nigger. I don't got a problem with him saying colored, because if you got a problem with him saying colored, I don't like the term because I do think it's a racist term. It's what they used to call him. But if you're going to have a problem with him saying colored, you need to tell the NAACP to change their name. You remember I just did a video on the other station, The Truth, Damn It, and I said the difference between the NAACP, nigger, and nigger. N-I-G-G-E-R and N-I-G-G-A. The National Association for the Advancement of Colored People need to change their name if it's a racist word. But he says they never learned to pick cotton. In other words, referring that the only job that they can get is picking cotton. That's bullcrap. That ain't the problem. The problem is they didn't learn how to pick cotton. That ain't the problem. The problem is not they don't have nothing to do. You know what the main problem in the black community, and I always say this, well, you got to be around black people. You got to understand the mindset of them. First of all, they have been enslaved by constantly talking about slavery. They got these so-called professors and educated Negroes who keep telling them that the white man is holding them down. Jews were enslaved, too, on more than one occasion. Are they sitting in the projects waiting for handouts? Hell no. Some people say if you'd have gave them their reparation, they wouldn't have had this problem. No, Cadillac dealer would be richer if you had gave them reparations. That ain't the problem. Now, I know people think because they didn't pick cotton, they don't have anything to do. They got plenty to do. The problem is a leadership problem. That's the problem in the black community is a leadership problem. If you had true leaders, including the home and the community, blacks would be in this shape. They needed to divorce. Look at all the videos I told about divorcing your damn leaders. That's the problem. Not they didn't learn how to pick no damn cotton because it's plenty educated. You went to the black neighborhoods where those downtrodden enslaved Negroes are living in the projects off the government subsidy. That ain't the problem, though. The problem is it's a lack of leadership in the homes. It's a lack of leadership in the communities. It's a lack of leadership in the churches. It's a lack of leadership in the universities. And they have enslaved them more. They are more enslaved now than they ever been before. But I'm going to say to the conservatives and the liberals, if you are mad at this thing, now, I don't think Clyde Bundy is a racist. I think he's a little prejudiced. And when I say prejudice, a lot of people are prejudiced. A lot of people have quarrels with different things. I've said this before. Like some whites say they hate all rap music just because, I guess it's supposed to be, quote, blacks doing it. It's disrespectful. All rap not disrespectful. But and some blacks are prejudiced and racist because they're saying, I know some blacks who say they don't trust no whites. Now, that ain't downright racist. I'd like to know what it is. There are some blacks, or there are some whites who think that the only job that blacks can get is shuffling and picking up trash or picking cotton. There's plenty of blacks who can do a whole lot more than this. But I know what they're going to make this out to be. They was going to use this, and they're going to get the conservatives, they're going to get Clyde Bundy to keep answering this question. If he's going to address it one more time, I'm moving on now. I'm moving on to bigger pitches because they're going to try to get you sidetracked and lead you to play defense. And you can't play no offense when you're playing defense all the time. But if they got a problem with this, I'm going to read a couple of statements with other people who said a whole lot more racist things than this. Now, if you got a problem with Clyde Bundy, you ought to have a problem with some of these other people who they said. Now, this is Bill Clinton, the first black president, not an African-American, but first black president. He once said that this guy would have been carrying our bags. This is Bill Clinton speaking about Barack Obama. He said a few years ago, this guy would have been getting us coffee. Now, guess who told on Bill Clinton about these statements? It said Ted Kennedy. Ain't a conservative told. Ted Kennedy said Bill Clinton said this about Barack Obama when the Billster was trying to get Hillary elected. Now, he's not the only one. Joseph Biden, I know you remember that famous statement by Joseph Biden. He says, I mean, you got the first mainstream African-American who is articulate and bright and clean and nice-looking guy. If that ain't racist, I like to know. He said, that's a storybook. In other words, Joseph Biden said, I'm not used to seeing a mainstream African-American who is articulate and bright and clean. In other words, he actually speaks well and he likes to take baths. That's how I'm looking at it. But we can look at others. Now, if those statements ain't racist enough, now, if a Republican had said those same statements, they would have been jumping on this. Now, just story, I don't agree with Clyde Bundy's assessment of the Negro in the room, but I say it all the time. Negroes are more enslaved. The blacks back under slavery was freer than most of the Negroes are today. They're still enslaved right now because it's bad when your mind is enslaved. You can put you anywhere you want, you're still enslaved. But when your body's the only thing enslaved, your mind is free, you got a better chance. But let's just read some of the racist people throughout history that blacks love. This is a statement. I'm going to see if you know who this statement is by. He says, I think one man is just as good as another. So as long as he's not a nigger or a Chinaman. Uncle Will says that the Lord made a white man from dust, a nigger from mud. Then he threw up what was left, and it came down a Chinaman. He does hate Chinese and Japs. This is this person talking saying this. So do I? It's just race prejudice, I guess. But I am strongly of the opinion Negroes ought to be in Africa, yellow men ought to be in Asia, and white men ought to be in Europe and America. Guess who said this? Harry Truman. Flat out racist Harry Truman. That's not all. Now, we're going to look at some of the other things that these so-called black power white people say. This is another person talking. See if you know this person said this. Some junior high nigger kicked, N-I-G-G-E-R, kicked Steve's ass while he was trying to help his brother out. Junior high or sophomore in high school, whatever it was, Steve had that nigger down. However, it was Steve's fault. He had the nigger down, and he let up the nigger, and the nigger blindsided him. Roger Clinton said that's Bill Clinton's brother. Now, y'all want to be talking about racism. That's racism. This is another one by a left-wing radio host. He says, if you're their black-haired answer mammy, he was referring to Condoleezza Rice, who be smart, does they like how you shine their shoes, Condoleezza, or the way you wash and park whitest car? This is what Neil Rogers said about Condoleezza Rice. You know Mike Wallace, don't you? CBS News, Mike Wallace. He once said, blacks and Hispanics are too busy eating watermelons and tacos to learn how to read. That's not racist? Since you got a problem with people saying racist things. Oh, I'm not finished. This is a senator, Democrat senator said, rather I should die 1,000 times and see O glory trampled in the dirt, never to rise again, than to see this beloved land of ours become degraded by race mongrels, a throwback to the blackest specimen from the wilds. This was Robert Byrd, former Klansman. And you all are supporting the Democratic Party. So if you have a problem with what Clive Bundy said, you should have a problem with a whole bunch of more of these racist other Democrat whites, what they said. Do I need to go on with the racism of these white Klansmen over there? Yeah, by the way, he was a senator for years. You didn't have a problem with that. there are many other incidents. Who is it? London B. Johnson, who made the statement, we'll have these niggas voting a Democrat for the next 200 years. London B. Johnson, London Baines Johnson said that. So if you got a problem with Clive Bundy saying, I want to tell you one thing I know about the Negro, when you drive past the housing projects, when I drive past the housing project too, I see an enslaved Negro. That's what I see. People sit on the porch, but they're not the only one having an abortion. They're not the only one on welfare. There's more whites on welfare. It's just percentage higher with the blacks. And there are too many Negroes in the neighborhood killing one another, having abortion. Blacks are the leading aborters in the country. That's a known fact. But they wouldn't have been better off being picking cotton. I can guarantee you that. What they would have been better off is getting better leaders and start raising your kids to go out and get a damn job. You don't need to be enslaved. You don't need nobody telling you to pick cotton and do other things in order for you to be able to speak your damn mind. Are you freaking kidding me? Yeah, the problem is a lack of leadership in the black community. Not a lack of being enslaved or picking cotton. The Negro has been let free, but the Negro volunteered to enslave himself to the Democratic Party and these subsidizing government programs. They said, kick the father out, we'll take care of you, we're big daddy government. That's what they have said. Now, if you Republicans should learn anything, learn how the Democrats play. And all you liberals, white, breathe. I said breathe. See, be consistent if you're going to criticize something. Just be consistent with what I'm saying. breathe.
Can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later gotta cut you down, sooner or later gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Well, my goodness gracious, let me tell you the news. My head's been wet with the midnight dew. I've been down on bended knee, talking to the man from Galilee. He spoke to me with a voice so sweet, I thought I heard the shuffle of angels' feet. He called my name and my heart stood still when he said, John, go do my will. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later gotta cut you down, sooner or later gotta cut you down. Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man, but as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later gotta cut you down, sooner or later gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Excuse me, testing. Yeah, I ain't gonna trip on E.T. Williams' interviews. But E.T. Williams, he has his views and points of views, and I like having him on my show. But at the end of his little rant, he was making some poignant points. Now, I feel that the Clyde Bundy in-your-face 24/7 rant was just something to divert the attention from what was going on in Michigan with the affirmative action. Let me just run some clips back there. I'm going to deal with Donald Sterling in a minute, but let me go on to this affirmative action because everything is playing on face here. You have the affirmative action law in Michigan struck down and overturned. And you have them overturned. And then you had everyone saying that we're in a biracial society. Then this comes up. Timing is everything. But, you know, America is America. Let's not trip on that. America is America. So let me go on some liberal stuff for a second.
So the Supreme Court just made a ruling upholding the state of Michigan's prerogative to not have affirmative action in their schools. In fact, let me quote the Associated Press here. In a 6-2 ruling, Michigan voters, they said, had the right to change their state constitution to prohibit public colleges and universities from taking account of race in admissions decisions. Now, we're considered generally a progressive show, and so you might think that I'm outraged by this decision, but not only am I not outraged by it, I agree with it. I think the voters of Michigan do have a right to make that decision. They made that decision. And by the way, further, so that's the constitutional issue. On the policy issue, I generally agree with the voters of Michigan. I think that affirmative action was actually incredibly important in the beginning. Now, anybody who argued against affirmative action for the first however many decades, two decades, three, four, five decades, I think was wrong. Because it's oh, well, let's be colorblind. Well, that's easy for white folks to say at the time because they had all the jobs. So if you wanted to break into being a cop, being a firefighter, break into the union, into a contractor position or a white-collar position, well, all those jobs belong to white people. So we had to have a way to at least give minorities in this country a fair chance at those jobs. We did for a long time. I now think we've gotten to the point where it does minorities more harm than good to continue to apply affirmative action. Because I've seen in my whole lifetime, unfortunately, the other side of that equation where I've seen different Americans, and not all right-wing, not all conservative, go, oh, yeah, yeah, they just got that because of affirmative action. So it unfortunately discredits the great work and accomplishments of so many minorities that I now think that the scales have been tipped, and to be fair, I've thought that for a long time, and that it's doing a little bit more harm than good, even though it was absolutely necessary in the beginning. Now, I think it's fair to disagree about that, and I think that different states are should be allowed to vote any way they like. But I will also add that generally right-wingers and who happen to be mainly white that have been pushing for this decision ought to be careful what they wish for. So let me show you what has happened in the states that they have lifted affirmative action on. Now, in California, that is an incredibly confusing chart, but what you see there is, especially among undergraduates at the very right-hand side, that when they lifted affirmative action, the number of whites in the schools did not increase, they decreased. In fact, for the undergraduates, Asians have caught them, if not passed them. Oops. It turns out when you just look at test scores and grades, the group that does best in this country is not white people at all. In fact, they do substantially worse. It's Asians who do the best. I like them apples. So if you think that's an interesting case study, now in California, they're not allowed to give a thumb on the scale of race, but they do consider other things like socioeconomic background, etc. So that those charts that you just looked at are not as skewed as they could be if all they did was look at test scores. Well, that is what they do in some New York high schools, including Stuyvesant. So let's take a look at Stuyvesant and see how that worked out. When you just look at test scores, how do they do? Well, okay, we've got 9 black students, so overall in 2013, not great. 24 Latino students. Oh, wow, all those white students are a lot more, 177. Whoops, 620 Asian students. White folks, how do you like affirmative action now? My guess is all of a sudden, like, wait, did we say we were against affirmative action? I mean, look, look, we need an even playing field here. These Asians, I mean, I don't know, it's not fair to compete against them. We need an even playing field. The Supreme Court, we changed our mind. Please, please, please bring affirmative action back. Well, it turns out when you lift affirmative action, you certainly don't get the diversity that we normally are used to in this country, and that is a significant issue, and I think that affirmative action for socioeconomic background is actually really important, probably the right way to go going forward. So if you were born in a position where you're economically disadvantaged, whether you're white, Asian, black, Latino, then I think it's fair to say, hey, listen, they had a harder time, and let's take that into account, okay? But if you just want to do it on test scores, white right-wingers, be careful what you wish for. You just might get it.
The Supreme Court is upholding the right of voters in Michigan to ban race as a factor in college admission decisions.
It's a decision that's reigniting debate. NBC's Steve Handelsman has the details from Washington.
In a referendum in 2006, 58% of Michigan voters approved amending the state constitution to ban any consideration of race in public college admissions and public employment. At the Supreme Court today, the 6-justice majority upheld that process. Justice Anthony Kennedy writing, "This case is not about how the debate about racial preferences should be resolved. It's about who may resolve it." The court did not rule on the constitutionality of affirmative action, but opponents are still celebrating.
Well, we live in a time with a black president, a black attorney general, when to make the kind of claims that people are being discriminated against and being prevented from entering into positions in a university or a job at a hospital or a public employment project simply no longer makes sense.
The NAACP says affirmative action is still needed.
Segregation and racial inequality exist throughout this country. In housing, we see it in employment, we see it in schools. And so that is something that must be addressed.
Justice Sonia Sotomayor agreed, saying judges ought not sit back and wish away racial inequality. And she said of the Michigan referendum, democratically approved legislation can still oppress minority groups. Eight states now ban consideration of race in admissions and hiring, and more states are now expected to ban it. I'm Steve Handelsman, NBC News, Washington.
The president at the University of Texas at Austin released a statement today following the Supreme Court decision. It says in part, "We are reviewing today's Supreme Court decision, but based on our preliminary review, we do not believe it has any effect on the University of Texas at Austin's admission policies or our recent admissions decisions." You'll recall UT Austin has been battling a lawsuit over the admissions policy since 2008. Abigail Fisher was denied admission to UT Austin. She fell just short of the top 10% rule. Then race plays a part of the admissions process. Fisher claims the university discriminated against her, violating the Equal Protection Clause. The case made it all the way to the Supreme Court, but then it was knocked back in June. Last November, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals came to Austin to rehear the case. Today, UT said they are still waiting on a decision from the Fifth Circuit.
I want to go back to our Fox News alert because moments ago, voters, the U.S. Supreme Court made a decision now on a case that's been, in fact, waiting for some time now. The Supreme Court issued its decision on race in college admissions. This case came out of Michigan. The court ruled that the state does not have to use race as a factor. In fact, it said voters could change its constitution to prohibit schools from taking race into account. What's the impact on this? Emily Tisch Sussman, campaign director for the Center for American Progress Action Fund, rather. Morning to you, Emily.
Hi, good morning.
And David Webb, SiriusXM radio host and a Fox News contributor. David, good morning to you as well.
Good
David,
morning,
I know
Bill.
You covered the story quite a bit on radio. What is the impact of this 6-2 ruling?
It's significant. Even with Justice Kagan recused, what we have is a 6-2 decision that says that we have got to end discrimination, which is what affirmative action has become in large part. At a time in our country when there needed to be a change coming out of civil rights, there was a short period for affirmative action, but now it has become a tool, especially with the state institutions in Michigan, of denying access to Americans based on ethnic identity. This is a good decision. It is a needed decision upholding the Sixth Circuit Court initial decision, so therefore Michigan
well, I
can finally move forward.
Well, when it comes to affirmative action, I mean, this was the case that everybody has been waiting
yes.
on. Emily, what do you believe? I mean, in the early stages of digesting this decision, what's the effect? What's the impact?
Look, so we'll see more once we see the actual decisions and once we see the actual opinions. But I would actually disagree with David on the fact that this is a massive ruling on the substance of the issue. Even though it was 6-2, the judges were saying that there's different reasons for upholding the law. And let's look at what the actual challenge was. This is not the substance on whether affirmative action is legal or not legal for a state to be using. The voters of Michigan had gone to the ballot. So it's a matter of whether it is okay for the voters to take strip away the state's ability to use this in state universities on the ballot, right? So it's sort of similar to the way the Prop 8 decision was in California. Is it okay for the voters to go to the ballot on the issue? And so the court ruled that it is okay for the voters to go to the ballot to decide this issue.
And the three microphones, one of them
sorry
is being
about
used
that,
by
Bill.
Me now. What the court said, you're right about that, Emily, that voters could change the Constitution if they wanted. They also said the lower court was wrong, David, when it set aside this case as discrimination.
How do you add that now into the equation as you evaluate?
Well, it goes along with the comment that about the voters. The voters get to choose because our society has advanced. And even Sandra Day O'Connor said that there was a time limit on this. Other justices have said this, that there's a time when affirmative action needs to go away. Our society has advanced. There is access for all. And we need to get back to a point of true fairness, which is competitiveness on the merits. Again, back to the voters, back to the American people,
okay,
and our right to choose.
All right, Emily, I cut you off. Go.
It's quite all right. I think our argument goes to the fact that this is a very live debate in this country. The court did not decide if it is discrimination to still use race as a factor helping or meaningfully, you know, helping minorities get in. This is based on a long history that we've had in this country of not providing the same opportunities for all people and all races. Specifically, it is not that far in our future to get the same opportunities to go to college. And also, I mean, the ruling case on this issue is also in Michigan. Michigan is apparently hot ground for all of this. But saying that, you know, it is not just a benefit to the minority students who are allowed in. It is a benefit to the university. It is a benefit to everybody to have diversity in the classroom.
It is history, and it is past. America is not the America it was in the 60s. We're in 2014. We've changed. A woman was the focal point of this case initially and of other cases. So we've got to look at this for where we are as a country. Again, the justice
David,
has said
would
this
you,
to go.
Yeah, do you expect voters in Michigan to go after changing the state constitution? Do we know that answer yet?
I don't think we know the answer, but I expect that there will be a significant effort to make the Constitution reflect the societal changes where we are as a very, very progressive, let's use that term, and very modern society
right,
in America.
Okay. Emily, I'll give you the last word.
I do love David calling it a progressive society, but I think that also means that we need to be honest about where people are starting compared to what opportunities they have and what those opportunities mean for them and creating an equal playing field.
Equal outcome doesn't exist, but equal opportunity does exist in America. That is the reality.
Thanks to both of you, David Webb, Emily Tisch Sussman. Thanks for the debate today. Appreciate
it.
Thank you, Bill.
Now, you can see where I'm trying to go with this, right? They're trying to make it seem that we are in this new society where everything is equal. So therefore, blacks don't need certain rights. You see, they pile up everything in the minority bucket. Asians, Latina, women, LGBT, everybody are being classified as minority. So we sit here getting the Voting Rights Act knocked down. We got the affirmative action bill knocked down to me, which is good. Let's all go to black colleges now. Hey, you know what I'm saying? But we're not in this post-racial world as we thought we would be that since we elected Barack Obama our president. You know, 347-838-9825. Be back in a minute.
Bucks down on Main. I hope you understand. When I put on that t-shirt, the only thing I meant to say is I'm a Skinner fan. The red flag on my chest somehow is like the elephant. Corner of the south.
And I just walked him right in the room. Just a proud rebel son with an old can of worms. Looking like I got a lot to learn. But from my point of view, I'm just a white man coming to you from the Southland, trying to understand what it's like not to be. I'm proud of where I'm from, but not everything we've done. And it ain't like you and me can rewrite history. Our generation on eggshells, fighting over yesterday, and caught between Southern pride and Southern blame. They called it Reconstruction, fixed the buildings, strides and tears. We're still sifting through the rubble. After 150 years, I try to put myself in your shoes, and that's a good place to begin. It ain't like I can walk a mile in someone else's skin. Yes, I'm a white man living in the Southland, just like you.
Mr. White Man, I wish you understood what the world is really like when you're living in the hood. Just because my pants are sagging doesn't mean I'm up to no good. You should try to get to know me, I really wish you would. Now my chains are gold, but I'm still misunderstood. I wasn't there when Sherman's march turned the South into firewood. I want you to get paid, but be a slave, I never could. Feel like a newfangled jangle dodging invisible white hood. So when I see that white cowboy hat, I'm thinking it's not all good. I guess we're both guilty of judging the cover, not the book. I'd love to buy you a beer, conversate and clear the air. But I see that red flag, and I think you wish I wasn't here. If you don't judge my new rag, I won't judge your red flag. Mason Dixon needs some fixing.
I hope you understand what this is all about.
Quite frankly, I'm a black Yankee, but I've been thinking about this lately.
I'm a son of the new South.
The past is the past, you feel me?
And I just want to make things right.
Let bygones be bygones.
All that's left. Southern pride.
R.I.P. Robert E. Lee. But I gotta thank Abraham Lincoln for freeing me. You know what I mean? It's real. It's real. It's true.
The mellow sounds of Jimmy Early.
Hey, Curtis, this is supposed to be your night, right? Let's have some happy time. Brian, I'm going to give you a count off. The rest of y'all come in when I tick, right?
What the hell's he doing?
1, 2, 3, hit me. Bop, bop, bop it out of bebop. Bop, bop. Yeah, bass man. Come on up. 1, 2, 3, hit me.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stay in your seats. We're back live in 2 minutes.
Jimmy got S-O-U-L, soul. I'm having a little fun with that Southern pride, that LL Cool J accidental racism, because that is what's going on now. I don't think we need a beer summit, but let me go on to what's really bugging everybody right now while the Bulls are highly in this hot contested playoffs. Donald Sterling, everybody.
Honey, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, too.
I wish I could change the skin, the color of my skin.
That isn't the issue. You missed the issue.
What's the issue?
The issue is we don't have to broadcast
it. I'm not broadcasting anything. I don't do anything wrong.
Nobody said you did anything wrong.
I don't do anything wrong. If we ever have any issues, it's because people call you and tell you things about me that are not true.
Why are you broadcasting?
I'm not broadcasting anything.
Why are you taking pictures with minorities? Why?
What's wrong with minorities? What's wrong with black people?
Nothing.
What's wrong with these families?
It's like talking to an enemy. There's nothing wrong with minority. They're fabulous. Fabulous. Because you're an enemy to me.
Why?
Because you don't understand.
I don't understand what?
Nothing.
That racism still is alive?
No, but there's a culture.
What culture?
People steal certain things. Hispanics steal certain things towards blacks. Blacks steal certain things towards other groups. It's been that way historically, and it will always be that way.
But it's not that way in my heart and in my mind.
But maybe you want to adjust to the world.
But why? If the world doesn't do anything for me and they don't make me happy.
You're right. I don't want to argue with you. I don't want to argue.
I can't be racist in my heart.
And that's good. I'm living in a culture, and I have to live within the culture. So that's the way it is. That's how I got it. I got the whole message. You live with your heart.
I don't... You're
you can't be flexible. You can...
I am flexible. I understand that that's the way you were raised, and that's your culture, and I'm respectful. And
why do you have to disrespect them? Those that are...
Who am I disrespecting?
The world before you.
Why am I disrespecting them?
Well, what, by walking, and you're perceived as either a Latina or a white girl. Why should you be walking publicly with black people? Why? Is there a benefit to you?
Is it a benefit to me? Does it matter if they're white or blue or yellow?
I guess that you don't know that. Maybe you're stupid. Maybe you don't know what people think of you. It does matter, yeah. It matters.
Do you know that I'm mixed?
No, I don't know.
You know that I'm mixed.
You told me you were going to remove those. You said, yes, I understand you. I mean, you change from day to day. Wow. So painful. Wow.
People call you and tell you that I have black people on my Instagram, and it bothers you.
Yeah, it bothers me a lot that you want to broadcast that you're associating with black people. Do you have to?
You associate with black people.
I'm not you, and you're not me. You're supposed to be a delicate white or a delicate Latina girl.
I'm a mixed girl.
Okay. Well, but we
and don't... you're in love with me. And I'm black and Mexican, whether you like it or not,
okay.
Whether the world accepts it or not. And you're asking me to remove something that's part of me and in my bloodstream because the world thinks different of me and you're afraid of what they're going to think because of your upbringing. You want me to have hate towards black people?
I don't want you to have hate. That's what people do. They turn things around. I want you to love them privately in your whole life. Every day you could be with them. Every single day of your life.
But not in public?
But why publicize it on the Instagram and why bring it to my games?
Why bring the black people to the games?
I really don't want to discuss that anymore. It's over. I don't want to talk about it.
I'm sorry that you feel that way.
I feel that way so strongly, and it may cause our relationship to just break apart. And if it does, it does. It's better to break apart now than to break apart later.
I'm sorry that you still have people around you that are full of racism and hate in their hearts. I'm sorry that you're still racist in your heart. I'm sorry that you live in a world that still...
How about your whole life? Every day, you could do whatever you want. You could sleep with them, you could bring them in, you could do whatever you want. The little I ask you is not to promote it on that and not to bring them to my games.
I don't bring anyone to the game.
Okay, then. There's nothing to argue about.
I know.
Okay, we got a big problem here. I really don't feel like going anywhere. I don't feel like going to Europe. I don't feel like just going to the whole thing. We gotta pay it. If you didn't like someone that I was with, I would stop seeing that person.
I'm sorry, I don't have any more friends. What would you like me to do? Remove the skin color out of my skin?
Is that a real issue, or are you making something up?
I mean, I just don't understand what the issue is.
There's nothing wrong with you or your skin color. Why are you saying these things? To upset me? Okay.
Sweetie, I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry, too. We made a giant mistake, both of us. Everything you say to me is so painful. Do I want you to change the color of your skin? You know how to really hurt somebody. And just, instead of saying, I understand.
I don't understand how you can have so much hate towards the minority.
I don't have any hate on nothing.
I cannot understand.
Why would you say
that? How a person like you who's elevated, who's here, still feels above the world, and you can't even be seen with someone in which is considered of a different skin color.
They can be with me all day long and all night long.
I can't believe that a man who's educated, a man who's a scholar, a man who's...
Well, believe it and stop talking about it. Let's finish our discussion with a period, okay? You're not making any good points. You can't believe this man. That's all I am. I'm not a good person in your eyes. If I was a good person, you would say, I can't believe this. I can't believe that.
What am I
saying? But you're all lies. I love this.
Look at all this negativity coming from
me. There's no negativity. I love everybody. I'm just saying, in your lousy Instagrams, you don't have to have yourself with walking with black people. You don't have to. If you want to, do it.
If it's white people, it's okay? If it was Larry Bird, would it have made a difference?
You're just a big fighter. I can see. Who would want to live with a woman like you? Who would want to live with a woman? All you ever wanted to do was fight. You're a born fighter.
I'm sorry that you're mad.
You're in the worst mouth.
Why are you so angry, honey? What's wrong?
Well, why would you bring up Larry Bird? What has he got to do with it? You can walk all night long with your sisters or your family.
I saw someone I admire. I admire Magic Johnson.
Okay, good.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
He's made a lot of changes for his community, for the world, for the people, for the minorities. He's helped a lot of people.
Why are you forcing this down my throat? I'm finished talking to you. I have nothing more to say.
And I took a picture with someone I admire.
Good.
And he happens to be black, and I'm sorry.
I think it's nice that you admire him. I know him well, and he should be admired. And I'm just saying that it's too bad you can't admire him privately. And during your entire life, your whole life, admire him. Bring him here. Feed him. F*** him. I don't care. You can do anything. But don't put him on an Instagram so the world has to see, so they have to call me. And don't bring him into my games, okay?
I don't know him personally.
Okay. Please leave me alone. Please, please.
I'm sorry. Is there anything that I can do to make you feel better?
No, you could never make me feel better.
I'm sorry.
You're just a fighter. You.
You know, had all weekend to think about this. You know, the first instant that came to my mind was, okay, this is obviously disturbing, it's disgusting, it's very unfortunate. But I must admit to you, Skip Bayless, I kind of had a smile on my face because I also was not surprised. And I wasn't surprised because I remember one time I was in the Staples Center a couple of years back, and believe it or not, Donald Sterling always comes up to me when he sort of sees me at the games for the Clippers, and he says, I'm such a fan of your work. I just love your work, and blah, blah. And I appreciated the compliments and the kind words. And my man Baron Davis, who used to play for the Clippers, pulled me to the side one day. He said, do you know this man's history? Do you know what he's doing? Because I had no idea. I had no clue. And then you look up and you see racial discrimination lawsuits. You see the Department of Justice involved. You see a $2.17 million settlement that he had to dole out because of his transgressions, refusing to rent to black and Hispanic families. And I said to myself, you know, okay, we got this. We see what it is right now and understand what's going on here. Clearly, based on a lawsuit the wife has filed against the woman that he supposedly, allegedly was having a relationship mm-hmm. with on the side,
yep.
You know, we understand he was messing with the girl, he was talking to her, and he was clearly offended that she was in the company and publicizing friendships, relationships, or whatever the case may be with black people. That part did not surprise me one bit that Donald Sterling would feel that way. What resonated with me, however, is when he talked about how Magic Johnson, and then he said because she threw in the Larry Bird comparison, and he brought up Magic Johnson as well. She brought up Magic Johnson, and he said, I don't mind you hanging out. You do whatever you want to do. Just don't publicize it, and don't bring him to my games. And obviously we heard on the tape him continuously alluding to black people. Why are you around black people? What does that do for you? Et cetera, et cetera. And if you listen to the tape, it resonates so profoundly because it speaks to ultimately the fears, the emotions, the ire, and the vitriol that continuously emanates from the black community. When we say, you really don't like us, you really don't want us around, you really want us to stay in our place. And Donald Sterling exemplified and illuminated that better than anybody could have hoped to. Because basically what he is saying is, I have no problem with black people so long as they're in a subservient position. I have no problem with black people whatsoever. As long as they stay in their place, I don't want them on with me. I don't want them on my level. So if you're having a relationship on the side with some young honey.
And okay, by the way, right, she's black and Mexican.
But okay, he didn't know she was black.
Okay. I guess that was news then.
He didn't know about the black part.
Okay.
He knew about the Mexican part. He didn't know about the black part.
Right.
But even then, considering some of the stuff that he's articulated in the past about blacks and Mexicans, it don't really matter because he seemed to have a problem with anybody who wasn't white. But what America needs to understand is that the uproar emanates from the fact, it's like an aha moment, see, I've been telling y'all moment. Because what Donald Sterling displayed, allegedly, assuming it's his voice, which they're still checking with the league, what he displayed ultimately substantiated the fears of an entire nation of black people.
Mm-hmm.
When we say, this is how a lot of folks feel about us who are not black. We're fine as long as we stay in our place. And what makes this egregious, and I have more to say, but I want to give it to you, Skip. Okay. But what makes this egregious is that the NBA is 80% black. You have a team that's more than 80% black. You have a head coach who is now also in control of basketball operations who is black.
Mm-hmm.
You have no problem saying these things because they're making you money, but you don't really want them around. They're basically labor to you.
Mm.
It's been validated. It's been substantiated forever. He has to go. He cannot be an owner in the NBA. Commissioner Silver, the NBA owners do not have the power to just strip him of ownership. They can only fine him $1 million. They could suspend them possibly indefinitely. What they need to do is stand up and galvanize America by sending a simple message. We don't want this man as a part of our NBA community. Can you help him get rid of us? Because the NBA's constitutional bylaws don't allow us to do that. We need to stand up. And they need to stand up and say, could you help us get rid of this man? Because that ain't us. We want no part of this man. That's what has to happen, quick, fast, and in a hurry. And by the way, Skip Bayless, if it doesn't happen by this time tomorrow morning, I'm going to have something more to say tomorrow.
I hope you do.
The NBA owners and Commissioner Adam Silver, they need 24 hours. This should be done by then.
And I'm going to, in a way, disqualify myself, as I always do, because in no way, shape, or form can I feel any way that you or Carrie do about the words that purportedly came out of that owner's mouth. I am speaking a little bit from a distance here, but right now emotions are running high and hot. Would you agree?
Yes.
High and hot, both in social media and within the confines of that Los Angeles Clippers basketball team. So at the very least here, all I can attempt to do from a distance is to provide a little bit of my perspective. And my perspective is this. Obviously, the purported comments, as you say, sure sounded like them, mm-hmm. didn't it?
Oh, yeah, I've spoken
yeah,
on
I know.
Several occasions.
Yeah.
That's his voice, but y'all can go ahead and
okay, whatever. But I'll still say, until we hear proof positive,
yeah.
the purported comments,
I believe it's his voice.
Thank you,
yes.
of one Donald Sterling that he made in private that now have become so painfully and extremely public, make him the definition of what you do not want in an owner owning a team in a league that's, I'll use your figure, 80% African-American, that is driven by African-American stars. He is now the definition of anti-black owner you do not want in charge of an NBA team. But here is, for me, the incomprehensible catch to this bombshell story. Donald Sterling's racist, sexist attitudes have been on public display for about a decade in Los Angeles, California, on public display. Even in a 2009 article, May 2009, in ESPN the magazine, one Peter Keating did a stunning, insightful look at this despicable human being and his attitudes toward blacks, Hispanics, and women, sexual harassment suits, and his mistreatment of women who worked under him for the Clippers and in his real estate firm on extremely public display. And nobody did one thing about it. Nobody. Not nobody in the NBA or outside the NBA. And it even got to the point that the LA chapter of the NAACP has honored this man
yeah.
twice in 5 years, including the scheduled one that was about to come up in May. Honored this man.
Leave that one.
Okay, I will. But I'm giving you the. Right. This is from a distance where my mind is exploding over all this. Mm-hmm. So very publicly, we have, as you point out, the two race discrimination suits that got settled. And is that not some admission of guilt when you settle? Sure. Although he boasted to the LA Times that I didn't pay a penny. The insurance company did. We absolutely denied doing anything wrong. And rather than it going on and on, the insurance company said it would settle. Okay, so I assume that's how he got out from under it as far as will the NBA punish him for this. You know, the Elgin Baylor lawsuit, mm-hmm. age and race discrimination. This is a man who was a longtime African-American GM under Donald Sterling with the Clippers, and Elgin testified that this owner often said to him that he wanted a team of poor black boys from the South coached by a white coach. This is from Elgin Baylor. And Elgin's attorney over the weekend told J.A. Adonde of ESPN.com that he wasn't surprised at all by any of this because he talks about how everything that he said on this tape is consistent with his dark history of racial insensitivity. The lawyer for Elgin, through all these testimonies given, depositions taken in this lawsuit, Baron Davis has spoken publicly about Donald Sterling's racist attitudes. I guess it went in everybody's one ear and out the other. That's all I can figure out. So how did he get away with this? How did we get to this point that Chris Paul and Blake Griffin and their agents were very comfortable in committing long-term to Donald Sterling's franchise? Am I right about that, Stephen A? Yes. Did they not know any of this very public, despicable past of Donald Sterling? I'm stunned by this.
They did not
know. Okay? They did not know anything. How did they not know? How did their agents not know?
Well, again, their agents might be a different story, but the point is that you're sitting out there, you're playing basketball, you're not paying attention to some of these other things. You're thinking about the owner, how much money he pays. You're thinking about what kind of team that you have, et cetera, et cetera. You're not paying attention to things like that, especially when you can write it off like he just articulated with mm-hmm. the insurance companies. Well, I just paid them off. We didn't admit any guilt, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe they should have. You can make the legitimate argument that that is the case. But I can assure you, especially somebody like Chris Paul, knowing his family and him the way that I do, he didn't know this stuff. You know this.
You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar
Go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Well, my goodness gracious, let me tell you the news. My head's been wet with the midnight dew. I've been down on bended knee, talking to the man from Galilee. He spoke to me with a voice so sweet, I thought I heard the shuffle of angels' feet. He called my name and my heart stood still when he said, John, go do my will. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
No more. I can't sing no more sad songs. 1, 2, 3, hit me, bop the bop, bop it out of bebop, bop the bop, yeah, bass man, come on up. 1, 2, 3, hit me, sound good, yeah, saxophone on the floor. 1, 2, 3, hit it.
I remember, you know, crazy Donald Sterling stories from when I first moved to L.A. in 92.
Yeah, he's a... for years, they didn't hire enough trainers.
Yeah.
Like, they literally would get guys hurt. Baron Davis partially couldn't recover because they didn't know how to diagnose stuff. They wouldn't pay for stuff. He famously wouldn't pay for an assistant coach's cancer treatments.
Yeah.
Like, and so the players ended up picking up the tab on that?
Isn't he still in a lawsuit, I think, with Mike Dunleavy, the former coach, about money that wasn't paid? He's in the other, there was the other lawsuit with Elgin Baylor, the former GM, about...
Who, by the way, Elgin Baylor, who talked about the plantation mentality, and there's a lot of stories, and, well, I'm not going to pick sides, and you know what, turns out we can pick sides. Elgin Baylor, 100% right, Sterling, 100% wrong. Another great story about Donald Sterling and how dumb and inept this guy was. He said, I don't know whether it's part of the lawsuit or elsewhere, when he hired Elgin Baylor to be the general manager, he had not realized that Elgin Baylor had played in the NBA.
Mm, yeah.
One of the 50 greatest players of all time. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, didn't.
Also, Sterling used to pull this nonsense where players would go to pick up their checks and say, let me just pay you next week. And he would purposely not pay his players because he wants to keep that money so that it accrues interest for one extra week.
He's a
massively cheap, underhanded scumbag.
And then Blake Griffin and Chris Paul get handed to him and DeAndre Jordan, and then they hire Doc Rivers, and it's like, forget all that other stuff. Forget that 30 years of really running a double-A minor league baseball team as a National Basketball
Association. Well, he never even intended to win. He just wanted to make money.
I know, it's just he totally lucked out. But here's some of the other stuff that Donald Sterling has said over the years. We mentioned the lawsuit with Elgin Baylor where he talked about a plantation mentality with the Clippers. I think we can count that as just a flat-out win for Elgin Baylor. To a property supervisor in 2002, sworn testimony. Again, Donald Sterling owns a bunch of land and property buildings in the Southland, as they say on the news, and nowhere else. That's because of all the blacks in the building. They smell. They're not clean. That's Sterling in 2002. Also from that lawsuit, and it's because of all the Mexicans that just sit around and smoke and drink all day. I don't like Mexican men because they smoke, drink, and just hang around the house. And same, these are all from the same lawsuit. Is she one of those black people that stink? Just evict the bitch. I'm offering a lot of money for a poor black kid, he said. That was in regard to Danny Manning and signing Danny Manning in 1988, allegedly in David Stern's presence. I'm offering a lot of money for a poor black kid. On Koreans, sworn testimony. I don't have to spend any more money on them. They'll take whatever conditions I've given them, and they'll still pay the rent. 2009, according to former general manager Elgin Baylor, Sterling envisioned a, quote, southern plantation-type structure for the Clippers, one in which, as he allegedly put it to Baylor, said this to Baylor, poor black kids from the South played for a white head coach. This has all gone on. There's the biggest federal lawsuit in history for housing discrimination against Sterling for going out of his way to evict black and Latino tenants from his homes. He's a terrible guy. That's why we know this is true, because there's no doctoring of the tape. This is exactly what that guy would say. Now, Jeff Perlman is a writer, New York Times best-selling author. He's written 6 books. His latest book is Showtime, Magic, Kareem, Riley, and the Lakers Dynasty of the 1980s. He was a senior writer at Sports Illustrated and an ESPN.com writer. He is a serious, reputable sports writer. In 2013, when the Clippers hired Doc Rivers as their head coach, so a full season before we get this nonsense, Perlman wrote this about a headline, The Eccentric Donald Sterling. He didn't include this in one of his books because it didn't fit in, but it's a great story. So again, this is from Jeff Perlman. He talks about Paul Phipps. He says, those who really follow the NBA remember Phipps as the GM of the Clippers from October of 82 until the end of the season in 1984. Nice executive, nice man, genuine credibility, and eye for talent. He interviewed him several months ago for a book he's writing about the NBA in the 1980s, maybe for that Lakers book. He told me a story about Sterling that didn't make the final pages, says Perlman, but it stands out nonetheless, and it particularly stands out now. According to Phipps, during his time with the team, they were searching for a head coach to replace Paul Silas, a black head coach that Sterling had, who he fired. We needed someone different, Phipps told me, and one of the first guys we talked to was Raleigh Massimino. Basketball fans all know Raleigh Massimino. Coach, sort of like the Tommy Lasorda of college basketball, coaching at Villanova, won a national championship, stunned Georgetown, and a fun guy, the pasta sauce, overweight, and clearly a great basketball mind, too. At the time, Massimino was coaching Villanova, was known as a guy on the rise. He flew in. Pete Babcock, the director of player personnel, were impressed. He was organized. He had a great philosophy. We liked his approach to practice. When they got done with him, the Clippers were in San Diego. He had to fly from San Diego to L.A., then back to Philly to return to work at Villanova. Sterling hadn't met with him because he doesn't meet with these guys. He smartly at least let the basketball guys handle it. So Sterling calls and says, hey, I want to meet him. Babcock and Phipps go, oh, like we like this guy. We'd rather he not meet Jones, right? Because they're not idiots. So Phipps says, oh boy. Sterling told Phipps he'd sit down with Massimino at the gate at LAX for the guy flying from San Diego to L.A. And then they told Massimino that Sterling's a bit eccentric. He'd probably have his shirt open and six gold chains sticking out. And then they said, Raleigh, he likes to have other women outside his marriage, and there was this one blonde girl who was his friend, so they warned Massimino of this. But he's the owner. He gets to meet with him. According to Phipps, Massimino boarded the jet when he landed in LAX. He exited the walkway, and he spotted Sterling. They met, said Phipps, and between 3 and 4 in the morning, my phone rings, and it's Massimino, and he's screaming. I'm sorry, he says, I'll never work for that son of a bitch, says Massimino. So apparently he showed up with half a bottle of champagne and this blonde bimbo with him and the gold chains and everything, so he's drunk. And then Donald Sterling walks up to Raleigh Massimino and says, I want to know how you think you can coach all these niggers. And that was 1983, 84. And then for 30 years with this story and others like it, we knew this. And then again, I'm just struck. And we're all guilty of it. We all felt, I went to a Clippers game. They're exciting. They're fun to watch. It's great. But this has always been a bad guy. Everything in here is 100% true. It is 100% what he said. And the league has got to figure out a way. I mean, I know I said that they're going to have trouble doing it because they don't have the antitrust exemption baseball. So they got to figure out a way to force this guy to sell.
I don't even think it's that hard of a slippery slope. You know, the slippery slope argument that, oh, if they start kicking out guys like this, then they're going to have a problem on their hands. They don't have a problem with having track records for players. Rasheed Wallace, now Meta World Peace, formerly Ron Artest. When there's a track record, which a lot of times, I don't like the track record argument. If a guy gets into it in games, he gets into it in games, and he's going to get the normal punishment. And if you get more on him, but when the whistle blows faster for certain guys, I don't like that because that changes the whole game for people who aren't on the track record thing. This guy does have a track record, and there's no other comparison to it. If you find someone else in the future that has a comparable track record, kick his ass out too. This is the same way it goes. Nobody can actually fight this. If you're a racist asshole for your whole life, you don't belong here. You just, you know, it's a privilege.
Take your $685 million and go.
You know what I wish? I really wish that on these tapes, Sterling had just said nigger instead of said African American. Because that...
He didn't even say that. I think he said black. But
he said black.
To me.
Yeah, black. Now, if he had just said nigger...
Yeah, it would have been... But I think there's...
I think the outrage would have been 10 times greater, right?
I think the outrage is...
Look, he said the N-word before, right?
Yeah. This is...
So clearly he learned over the years, well, just don't say it, and then I'm not a racist then, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. That's...
Right?
Mm-hmm. Although I'm
but
sure
if he just said it, then it's even more obvious what he really
didn't
is.
Say it to her.
I'm sure
he said it in the last few months. I don't have any doubt. And it's real people who are affected by his stuff. I mean, forget Doc Rivers and Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, and as you say, and the white guys on the team, J.J. Redick and Turkoglu, and he had people living in his houses.
Yeah.
You know, who knows how many lives he upset and wrecked, at least temporarily or displaced temporarily, because of his bigotry.
You know, I've sort of changed my opinion just in the course of this conversation, because I actually agree with what you're both saying about that this should come from the bottom up. Let the players, I know we shouldn't put the pressure on the players to have to make a stand, but let the players or Mark Jackson and Doc Rivers say, we're going to delay this a half. I mean, do something powerful that will then force the NBA's hand. Because I have a feeling tomorrow, regardless of what happens, they're going to say they're suspending him, at least for the playoffs or something, while they investigate further. But do something really powerful that's a seminal, teachable moment that comes from the players. This league is, I don't know what percentage black.
About
80. This league is probably 80% black. Okay. I mean,
isn't that right,
like,
there?
Literally, if it's just a half-hour delay screwing up the TNT programming for tomorrow night or ESPN, whatever it's on, do something powerful that gives the power back to the players. Chris Paul, who plays for the Clippers, obviously, is the president of the Players Association.
Totally.
I mean, they have a lot of leverage here, and there's a lot of things they can do.
And
let it come from the bottom.
I think the NBA will let them take whatever stand.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, and on that, again, going to the being just
further than the black players, and not further than the Clippers. Because after the game yesterday, they asked Mark Jackson, who's the head coach of the Warriors, who just kicked the hell out of the Clippers last night, that he said, we're all affected by this. Because they asked, do you sense any lack of energy from the Clippers because of what they've gone through in the past 24 hours? He goes, we've all gone through it. You know, I don't want to say I feel like they had more, they were affected by it. We've all been affected by this. And to an extent, I called bullshit on that. Yeah, you were affected by it, but not to the same extent. This isn't your organization that the owner of the team is espousing these comments. So, let's, and again, then reaching past just their 80% of black players. If there's going to be a boycott of a game, and again, LeBron came out, everybody's come out talking about it, he said David West. If we say the Clippers and the Warriors should boycott a game, man, every game of this playoff series, everybody in every game should not play. If you're going to unify and not play, this is a league problem, man.
Yeah, they should.
Don't play any games, not just this one series.
Yeah, in a sense, it's too bad that Chris Paul is the head of the Players Association because if he were Kyrie Irving, if he were in, just pick a guy, if he were in Cleveland,
yep,
then it would make more sense if he said, we don't want to put this all on the Clippers.
Right.
Like, let's have the whole league take a stand here and not play. But now if he does it, he'll be like, I don't really want to be the only one.
True, right?
But I don't think there's any question. Like, I think I accidentally hit on something there. I don't see the Warriors. The Warriors have no interest, I imagine, in taking advantage
of course.
Of the Clippers.
Yeah. But someone,
I agree with all
of it to say he's scheming. But
I agree with all of this, but I would also like to see some significant action by the owners. I would like Jerry, I would like the Buss family to say, we don't want to share a stadium with this fucking asshole. Mm-hmm. I want him out of the Staples Center. We're going to do everything we can to kick him out of the Staples Center. I want to hear Mark Cuban talk about this. Mm-hmm. All the high-profile owners should stand up and say, we're not with
this
guy.
But you're a lawyer. You know how tough, like, those things, like, you can say it. Mm-hmm. That's great, but I'm sure they can't kick him out.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Right. You should make
the
stand.
Look, if you took it just on a basketball level, I agree with you. The Warriors would never take a free win on that. But you know what? Somebody that could do it, LeBron could say, I'm not playing tomorrow. They're up 3-0. They're going to destroy that team. They don't even need to play the other games. And then, you know what? The rest of the Heat would join him anyway. But imagine if just LeBron James sat out. That's it. They lose the game anyway, probably. I mean, actually, they may win. But if LeBron, the face of the league, said, I'm going to sit out. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the message in that would be something.
That's too much burden on LeBron.
It's
asking a lot of
him. All these things would be cool. I think it's critical that I think the burden is on the union to some extent, but it's the owners. It's the people with the money here. And I think the union needs to take a stand, and I think they need to be united. But I think you make a great point, Dave, but I worry about, like, that we then have a feeling of, like, oh, that if they don't do this, that somehow that it's gutless. Like, I don't think it's on them. Donald Sterling is part of that club. Mm-hmm. And that club is the club that needs to take the action. The league and the owners, and to some extent, I think the union needs to figure out a way to have a unified response, as you said, with all teams involved.
How happy is David Stern that he's like in Hawaii right now drinking a Mai Tai? You know what I mean? He's going, Adam Silver.
Like, Adam, don't fuck it up.
because to some extent, Silver is at least moderately inoculated, although he did work for the league, of course, from the, how'd you let this guy hang around? Because now we're getting all these other stories, which again were out, but they were piecemeal. Now, well, it just shows you, as always, as Mel Gibson learned, you know, you put it on tape, you put that tape on the radio and television, it changes the whole nature of the story.
Shortly after the release of an audio recording this past Saturday morning of a conversation that allegedly included Clippers owner Donald Sterling, the NBA commenced an investigation, which, among other things, included an interview of Mr. Sterling. That investigation is now complete. The central findings of the investigation are that the man whose voice is heard on the recording and on a second recording from the same conversation that was released on Sunday is Mr. Sterling, and that the hateful opinions voiced by that man are those of Mr. Sterling. The views expressed by Mr. Sterling are deeply offensive and harmful. That they came from an NBA owner only heightens the damage and my personal outrage. Sentiments of this kind are contrary to the principles of inclusion and respect that form the foundation of our diverse multicultural and multi-ethnic league. I am personally distraught that the views expressed by Mr. Sterling came from within an institution that has historically taken such a leadership role in matters of race relations and caused current and former players, coaches, fans, and partners of the NBA to question their very association with the league. To them, and pioneers of the game like Earl Lloyd, Chuck Cooper, Sweetwater Clifton, the great Bill Russell, and particularly Magic Johnson, I apologize. Accordingly, effective immediately, I am banning Mr. Sterling for life from any association with the Clippers organization or the NBA. Mr. Sterling may not attend any NBA games or practices. He may not be present at any Clippers facility, and he may not participate in any business or player personnel decisions involving the team. He will also be barred from attending NBA Board of Governors meetings or participating in any other league activity. I am also fining Mr. Sterling $2.5 million, the maximum amount allowed under the NBA Constitution. These funds will be donated to organizations dedicated to anti-discrimination and tolerance efforts that will be jointly selected by the NBA and its Players Association. As for Mr. Sterling's ownership interest in the Clippers, I will urge the Board of Governors to exercise its authority to force a sale of the team and will do everything in my power to ensure that that happens. This has been a painful moment for all members of the NBA family. I appreciate the support and understanding of our players during this process, and I am particularly grateful for the leadership shown by Coach Doc Rivers, Union President Chris Paul, and Mayor Kevin Johnson of Sacramento, who has been acting as the players' representative in this matter. We stand together in condemning Mr. Sterling's views. They simply have no place in the NBA.
Well, that was the commissioner. You heard his recommendation. Good night, everybody. We talk. We finish this up tomorrow. Good night. May your God be with you always.
Bucks down on Main. I hope you understand. When I put on that t-shirt, the only thing I meant to say is I'm a Skinner fan. The red flag on my chest somehow is like the elephant corner of the sound. And I just walked him right in the room. Just a proud rebel son with an old can of worms, looking like I got a lot to learn. But from my point of view, I'm just a white man coming to you from the Southland, trying to understand what it's like now. But not everything we've done, and it ain't like you and me can rewrite history. Our generation didn't start this nation. We're still picking up the pieces, walking on eggshells, fighting over yesterday, and caught between Southern pride. Southern blame. They called it Reconstruction. Fixed the buildings, dried some tears. We're still sifting through rubble after 150 years. I try to put myself in your shoes, and that's a good place to begin. Ain't like I can walk a mile in someone else's skin. Yes, I'm a white man living in the Southland. Just like you, I'm more than what you see. I'm proud of where I'm from, and not everything we've done. Somewhere between Southern pride and Southern blame.
Dear Mr. White Man, I wish you understood what the world is really like when you're living in the hood. Just because my pants are sagging doesn't mean I'm up to no good. You should try to get to know me, I really wish you would. Now my chains are gold, but I'm still misunderstood. I wasn't there when Sherman's march turned the South into firewood. I want you to get paid, but be a slave, I never could. Feel like a newfangled jangle dodging invisible white hoods. So when I see that white cowboy hat, I'm thinking it's not all good. I guess we're both guilty of judging the cover, not the book. I'd love to buy you a beer, conversate and clear the air. But I see that red flag, and I think you wish I wasn't here. If you don't judge my new rag, I won't judge your red flag. Mason Dixon needs some fixing.
I hope you understand what this is all about.
Quite frankly, I'm a black Yankee, but I've been thinking about this lately.
I'm a son of the new South.
The past is the past, you feel me?
And I just want to make things right.
Let bygones be bygones.
All that's left. Southern